I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars. And this week, we do actually talk about cars. I want to talk to you about a car, which I know is a bit weird on this podcast. I've just had a week with the Toyota Yaris.
Is that Cornish pirate Yaris, you say?
Yaris. Which I know you've driven because I've watched your Late Break Show film about it.
Yeah.
I know you drove it a bit ago, and I've been waiting to have a go in this, which, you know, of course, every car media has been frotting themselves senseless over this car, and there's a thread on it on Piston Heads, which is like over 400 pages long.
Is there?
Yeah, and it's full of people who've bought them or have ordered them. You know, it's like, it's really created a bit of a buzz, this car. So I was quite keen to have a go in it. And, you know, you get these cars where there's like sort of quite a lot of what feels like hype around them. And there's always a sense you're going to go, oh dear.
Is it all that?
And so I thought it was. I would start this show with some truths about the Yaris.
Yaris, you bastard.
And the truth is, it's fucking brilliant. It's absolutely sensationally good fun. And I said to someone on Twitter last week, because I mentioned it on there, and then someone went, "Oh, come on, I'm sick of all this hype. What's it really like?" And I had to say, sometimes people can say something's really brilliant and it's still really brilliant, and they're saying that because it's really brilliant. And I think this is true. You know, it's not perfect. It's not the best car ever in history, but it's bloody good fun and really interesting in a number of ways. And I think it's a terrific thing for Toyota to do, because on paper it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, the details you pointed out in your review, the detail that's gone into it and the re-engineering,
it's bonkers.
It's mind-boggling.
Oh, it's Lost Leader. It's got Lost Leader written all over it, hasn't it?
I do wonder, with Toyota, though, because they didn't get rich by writing checks when they didn't need to, I sort of feel like there must have been some meeting or other where they sort of justified it to themselves, like sort of corporate man maths, where they went, well, look, if we spent this many million on marketing, maybe we'd get this much return on it in terms of extra sales and image and all that. Or, you know, because image is a very hard one. But if you go, well, what about if we didn't spend the millions just on ads and, you know, lending cars to celebrities or whatever? What if we just built a fuck-off rally car?
Yeah, and Accio just went out there and just said, just tell you what, Accio, just build the car that you want to compete in with Tommy, and then we'll just pull the trigger on it and go, yeah, okay, let's do that.
I have a problem with Akio Toyota, because it sounds like you're trying to say his name is Akio Toyota, but you're talking like a shit DJ.
Hey, okay. It's Akio Toyota with his new
coming up.
His new single is Yari. Hi guys.
Okay, giving it the full 30-70 split in sport mode as ever. It's Akio Toyota.
The 30-70 would be the remix. Obviously, you'd have the 30-70 remix.
He wouldn't give the job to Stellantis because there's the beef there. But the 30-70 remix of Yaris is a banger.
Problem with Stellantis, they make light of it when it's actually quite a heavy duty track. I've done an awful lot of back work put into it, and Stellantis just gloss over all that and make it very Eurovision, and it'd be like, I'm not having that. I'm not frigging having that.
Why have you put saxophone over almost all of it? That's terrible. Anyway, I want to there's a couple of things I wanted to mention specifically about the Yaris, and one of them is something you brought up in your review, because you said there's loads of cubbies inside, but that's no good because everything will just slip around.
Yeah, they're all very shiny cubbies.
The one underneath the infotainment screen, it's got a rubber mat. I bunged my phone on there and a pair of sunglasses, and then went out and drove like a twat, and they did not slide about. I was really impressed, actually. Never mind the grip of the chassis. The grip of the rubber insert in the cubby tray in the middle of the dashboard was top-notch.
In which case, I've failed in my mission to comprehensively review the car.
You're going to have to go back and remake your video.
I'm absolutely going to have to go back. Damn it.
Now, the other thing, you know how the seat, the driver's seat, particularly if we're both quite tall, and the driver's seat is a bit high, and it won't go down
yes.
as low as you might want it. And I've seen this mentioned in other reviews and things, and I know some people are already working, aftermarket people are working on kits to sort it out. Litchfield, the
yes.
respected British tuner, have got yep. a whole Guri-Yaris thing going on, including, I think, they're working on a kit to drop the seat. And I asked Toyota, I was like, is this because... like it has to be sort of, you know, 98th percentile human being has to be within a certain range of the airbag for homologation reasons, and it's related to it being derived from the normal Yaris. And they went, all right, I see what you mean. Yeah, no, it's not that. Well, in fact, funny enough, initially they thought it was something to do with that, but one of the PR guys went and actually asked what's his name? The bloke who was like one of the head guys on the team. I can't remember. Anyway, it's not important. He came back and said, no, it's deliberate because the drivers sit very high in WRC cars these days.
Do they? Okay,
but they sit weirdly high. The co-driver sits on the floor, like he's down a little nest on the floor, like a baby bird.
Co-driver cannot see over the steering, over the dashboard. Because
no.
I've
no.
been a co-driver and I know it's terrifying. For that reason,
the co-driver is like a dog in a bed on the floor of the car, and then the Saito-san, that's the guy, the chief engineer. He they asked him, and he came back directly and went, they wanted a rally car view of the road ahead, so it's deliberate. But for me, because I'm quite tall, I found it a little bit too high.
Too high, yeah, a bit sort of Clio. Renault Sport, which was always too
yeah.
high, yeah, which yeah. was one of the things that let it down. All the controls felt so good and so engaging, but you did feel a little bit perched on a bird table.
Yeah, but those Clios, those old Clios, had very sort of metro angled steering wheel, didn't they? As well, a bit sort of like a bus,
a bit 45 degrees rather than
yeah.
It's true. I think the thing about the Guri-Yaris is that it's so. It's so compromised in that, uncompromised in that it's a true homologation car that is, and the attraction is the fun to drive, and that rawness. And most homologation cars historically, like the Yaris, actually aren't very attractive cars. You're not attracted to them because you think they look good. And that's, I think that's the case for all of it. The love grows for you knowing what it can do and how tough it is and how much punishment it can be put through. And so, because if anyone says the short wheelbase Audi Quattro is more attractive than the normal one, well, they're just bonkers. It just looks stupid, doesn't it? It looks like you've had your legs cut off at the shins. So
yeah, it looks like one of those Renault Kangoo vans you can get now. You know those really short wheelbase Kangoos? They just look ridiculous. It looks like a test mule for something else that's much smaller. They just cut and shut it. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. And I
like a Dakar Special. They never look right, do they? Dakar Special.
No. There's always something a bit weird about them, like a bad drawing of an actual car. The Gur, the thing. I went out in it. A proper drive, sort of like 150 odd miles in one afternoon in it, just went out and drove round and some nice roads not far from here, and it was not ideal because the snow that we'd had was melting mostly, but out in the countryside not entirely, and it was wet and it was cold, and I was like, this is not good weather to be stropping about. But it almost played to the car's strengths.
Oh yeah,
because I couldn't believe how much grip it's got when it needs it. But I think what makes it appealing is that, you know, it's like lots of four-wheel drive cars have got a lot of grip, but then they're sort of somehow a bit, you know, they're a bit too good almost. But it moves around a little bit and you feel the back end working as hard as the front, so it's not all fronty like a Fiesta ST or something, because
no.
it's four-wheel drive and the back's doing some effort. But then nor is it sort of, you know, a Golf R is really, really good, but sometimes it just feels like it's almost too easy because it's just got it. It's got it all covered. And,
well, that's why I'm not a massive fan of the Golf. I think it's good, but it's in danger of going towards the quattro numb side.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, if an Audi S3 does all of this, but it's instantly gratifying in that you know it's going to just hang on for grim death, but it's not actually exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And I just think the Yaris has got a bit of a sense of movement. Like, not, it's not like it's sliding all over the place, and I certainly wasn't brave enough to do proper kind of helmsman-y.
Yeah, but you use the manual wand, surely, because it honestly just grabs once. The back perfectly. It's so good.
I did do it just once, but I just thought, I think it's got a bit of movement in it, and I love the way it rides. It's firm, but I like the way it feels tough and sort of like it's got soft edges. It's a bit sort of Lotus-y or a bit Porsche GT3 or something like that. If anyone has ever driven any of those kind of cars where you go, it's not a soft ride, but somehow it's got soft edges on it.
It's
got
firm but comfortable. That's the way.
Yeah. It's firm. Yeah, it's not crashing around.
It's not AMG Plus, which is just... Sport, what's it? Sport Plus on the AMGs?
Oh, my God.
It's just, well, just lunatic.
They just lock the springs solid or something.
Yeah.
It's... yeah. And I kind of... I was trying to work out why the car's appealing as well. Is sort of because I think it's got some qualities that shine when you're not driving around like a twat. Because... you know, some fast cars, they only work and become enjoyable when you're on it.
Yeah.
That's their party piece.
Yeah.
But because it's got a nice gear change and because it's got that sort of good ride, which weirdly sort of works in urban areas because you feel like you're not going to break the car as you're going over badly surfaced roads and speed bumps and stuff. It's sort of, it has things that delight you at normal speeds, and then you know that when you get out of town you can sort of strop about, and it's really talented and amusing, and that engine's good. It pulls like a bastard, doesn't it?
It does.
I can't believe how, for a turbo particularly, it really sort of revs when you get up on it. And and also I just like the fact it's a Toyota, because I sort of feel like I trust them that they've made it work properly, like as in you can rag the crap out of it and it's probably going to stay the distance.
I desperately want someone. If I was an influencer, I would buy one now, and I would the experiment would be, I'm going to do 100,000 miles in it without any form of servicing, and I'm going to drive it as fast as possible. Well, why not? Because I think A, that would make a genuinely interesting influencer video, but two, I think it would be a car that has probably been tested to do that by Toyota, and it's been fine. You just go, yeah.
I'm not sure about the no servicing thing, because I have a feeling that engine's quite highly strung, isn't it? Like, you know, it's...
Yeah,
do you see that message that flashes up on the dashboard when it's cold and you set off when you first start it? I mean, it's, you know, it's right up our street, given what we were talking about last week about treating cold engines with respect. And it flashes up a message that says, avoid excessive acceleration due to low temperatures. It's giving you a little kind of, now look, it's cold... Don't rev me until I'm warmed up, you bastard.
Don't be a penis.
Think that's a little giveaway to the fact that, you know, basically a
Mitsubishi Evo FQ400 kind of territory where it's just like a...
Oh, you seem to reverse out of your garage. Please change my oil. Yeah,
it's like the lid on top of a boiling pan where it, you know, it just the water starts to just skip the top of the pan. I always imagine that to be the head gasket of the FQ400. It's just skipping, and a little bit of steam's popping out here and there. It's like, listen, I will deliver what you want, and you will be impressed.
Well, the head's just pattering on the
block. It's actually hovering. It's just sort of levitating.
One final thing about it, I was just going to say that I know you didn't like the interior so much in your review, and I sort of didn't mind it, and I thought it all works fine. And like I was saying about that, I like the Toyota-ness of it, because, you know, like the column stalks and stuff are all very satisfyingly sort of smooth and high quality. And then I noticed something that I went to change the volume on the stereo, and I hadn't noticed the volume controls on the wheel because they're a little bit small and fiddly. And I went to the knob on the unit, and I went to the far side. Like, I reached over to the left-hand side because I assume that's where the volume knob is, because on most cars it is, because they're designed by left-hand drive countries and they don't flip them for right-hand drive. And in the Gura Yaris, as I guess in all Yarai,
the
volume knob is nearest the driver, which is good, where it should be. And I thought, well, of course, because it's Japanese, it's from the right-hand drive country. And then I saw a picture of a left-hand drive interior. They flip the volume knob.
Really?
And I thought, so well, that's thoughtful. Just thoughtful, isn't it? That's thoughtful. And what do people want from life if not a little thoughtfulness?
Toyota would be a very good lover.
Very considerate lover.
Very considerate lover.
But, you know,
my final thought for the Guri Yaris is the fact that there's so much of a buzz about it from us lot and others, and a lot of people who maybe normally go down the sports car supercar buying / collecting route have bought one, which is great. But it isn't a limited edition car. I think a lot of people think it's limited edition, but it isn't.
That's an interesting point.
If there's a demand for it, Toyota said to me, if there's demand for it, we just keep making them. So actually, you know what? If there's a massive demand for them, it could end up being having that sort of 9/11 effect where you think you're buying a car that's extra special, and because it's a 9/11, it is, but it's actually still a very, very mass produced car, but it still feels special. You still want it, and you still think it's got something extra. So this is not like I've got a gold plaque, and honestly, this is only one of 300 globally, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's managed to capture that magic, that feeling that you are buying something limited, because I think you are buying something genuine. I think I might have said it in the piece. I don't think there's going to be another car like this, a piston car, non-hybrid. No. And of course, this car was built for a purpose that's actually null and void now, which is just weird.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes it even more interesting.
I have a feeling the only thing that will contribute to its rarity in the future is I sort of have a bad sense that quite a few of them are going to get crashed and or stolen.
Of course they are, but look, that didn't harm the legend of the Cosworth or the Lotus Carlton.
No, it won't harm the legend at all. It probably will just thin out the numbers a little bit. But you're right. It's a good point. I don't think it's going to be a mega rare car. But then, also you're right. The 911s aren't either, and they're still
very, very desirable.
Hold their value and all that sort of stuff.
And
you
mentioned the Storks. You were talking about the nice Storks and things.
I love a smooth Stork. It's the one thing that lets down my 911. That era of 911, 907s, the Stork
Storks
action is piss poor, yeah.
You need some
really
billet Storks or some carbine Storks.
At one point in their history, didn't TVR used to, they kept on using like generic Vauxhall Storks, but they just sort of put like leather and chrome sleeves over them.
I think they did actually. Was it right at the end? They have
I think
null,
so, because you had to pay more for them or something.
Yeah,
it's
just someone on a CNC machine just kind of turning out the end knobs. I wanted to bring up Storks because I know today we were intending to talk about Teslas, and there's a quote that I've just written down in my notebook: "Storkless steering yoke."
Yes,
Tesla's announced the revised Model S and Model X. Is it plaid edition? Do you call it plaid?
Plaid.
I'm going to call it.
Yes, so they've announced the updated Model S, Model X, and the big thing that's drawing all the attention is that the steering wheel is now more like a control yoke out of an aeroplane, or the wheel in kit.
On the Knight Rider.
Knight Rider.
It is Knight Rider spec.
And either way, this is exactly the sort of idiotic toss that draws in the kind of weird man children who get drawn towards Tesla and Elon Musk. But in the real world, that unless the steering is basically
so
half
quick
a turn lock to lock,
yes,
how is that going to be practical in like a multi-story car park, or indeed anywhere except on sort of
a road in Nevada that's straight
roads? Yeah. And it's like, it's almost, because I bet Tesla people will say, well, it's okay because it's, you know,
it's auto driving,
autopilot.
Yeah.
But the autopilot won't work in exactly situations where you need tight lock.
No,
like,
it won't.
I don't know, you know, manoeuvring around a car park.
No.
I just don't get it. Also, in an emergency situation where you do have to grab the wheel for some reason or other, then
it
you're going to be
there
grabbing at air. Yeah.
Air grab.
It's absolutely fucking stupid. And then the indicators have been taken off the Stork and they're buttons on the wheel, which, as anyone who's ever spent any time with a sort of modern generation Ferrari knows, does not work.
No, it's a bit crap, isn't it?
And it's actually the ones in the Tesla are worse than the ones in Ferrari, because Ferrari have two big proper buttons, and left is on the left and right is on the right. The Tesla one, both are on the left, and they're touch sensitive buttons.
Oh no!
With haptic feedback, but that doesn't. You're gonna have to look down to find them. It's like you don't have to look at an indicator stalk because you just know where it is by touch, and it's literally dangerous.
Yeah. I think that's probably an oversight. I mean, the performance figures quoted an Elon saying that it's the first production car to complete 0-60 in less than 2 seconds, the Model S Plaid.
Hmm.
And I have to say, the revised looks of the Model S, because the Model S is the only Tesla that looks half good, I would say. I couldn't live with it.
The Model 3's grown on me. I think it's quite a nice looking car. It's weird head on, because it doesn't have enough tumble home.
Yeah,
but it's I know there's loads of them around here these days, and I always think they're actually not a bad looking car. And funny enough, there's a black one parked around the corner from our house the other day, and I was walking past it with my boy who's six.
Yeah,
and he went, "That's a cool car."
Did he? And he didn't even know what it was.
Which is really interesting. Yeah. It's funny because that's not normally the kind of car that would attract his attention. If it had been a Lamborghini, it would have been. That's the kind of thing that grabs him. But it's funny because I was looking at social media, and of course, you know, I'm bitching about the control yoke because I do think it is genuinely an absolutely knobbingly stupid idea. And there's a reason. You know, if GM had introduced that on a car, everyone would be howling with laughter at their desperation, their pathetic attempts to do something new.
That's true, but, actually. Yeah, that is true.
Because it's Tesla, it's like, oh, Elon Musk, he's so visionary. No, he's not. He's playing everyone by just coming up with childish shite to grab attention. And it's working, because on social media I noticed, I think particularly people who aren't especially into cars are going, oh wow, and if they're of a certain age they're going, oh wow, I could be a Knight Rider, you know. So it's like it's pushed the right buttons. It's no wonder that people, especially non-car people, think that Tesla is really, really cool. And but I guarantee if Ford or GM or Renault or anyone had tried that same trick, people would have been going, well, that's just pathetic, isn't it? What are they trying? Oh my god, they're just desperate for something. They're grasping for ideas and coming up with any old nonsense. But the other thing about those new those updated Teslas is that Musk is saying that the car will be capable of deciding which direction you want to go in, forwards or backwards. So when you get in it,
save it.
It's up against a wall.
Just save it. I'm not interested.
I mean, this to me is like proper mind-boggling.
Don't tell me
stupid.
Where I do or don't want to go. I'm driving the bastard car.
So apparently if it's up against a wall, you put your foot on the brake to start it, and then the car goes, well, you can't go forwards because there's a wall, so I'm putting you in reverse. And you go, okay, well, I mean, that, as a very, very specific example, that's okay. But then what if you just put your foot on your brake to start it, and then you're farting around with your phone and you absentmindedly take your foot off the brake and the car is in reverse but you didn't put it there, and off your car goes into a child? I mean, I'm sure they'll say, oh, it's got sensors, it would never run over a child. And it's like, well, all those people who have crashes when they're on autopilot didn't agree with that, did they? So I don't know. It's this trust in tech that hasn't, I think, been fully proven out yet that is the worry.
The Model S Plaid still just doesn't sound right to me. 1.99 seconds to 60, which is incredible. And 155 miles an hour over the quarter mile, 200 mile hour top speed. And then the Plaid Plus flagship model will bump the range up to more than 520 miles. That's on the USA EPA scale, which is actually more strict, I think, a little bit more critical, which is, I think, the highest range EV known in production.
That's the stuff that's really impressive.
Well, that's what
and it always
I,
gets
that's
buried
what,
beneath idiotic steering wheels.
Completely, because that's what Tesla is amazing at, and that's what Tesla is unbeatable. No one can get near them for that.
And that's not even with their new battery tech, is it? They've just updated some of the cooling and things in the existing pack.
I think so.
So,
yeah,
that if that's even close to accurate, that's genuinely brilliant. And that's the kind
that's
of thing
the
that
real,
will...
That's the real cool stuff. And that's that's the envy of all of the other OEMs. And that when people fire their verbal grenades at me on YouTube comments and stuff, it's like, listen, I'm not a Tesla hater, because Tesla's drivetrain, their cells and their motors are the envy of everybody in this in the car industry. It's the other bits I have the problem with. And as we've said many times before, I suspect the people that don't quite see the difference in build quality are people that aren't car people. In the same way that if you go and get your car resprayed, there are many ways you can respray a car, and there's many qualities of finish. But if you haven't looked at what is a good repaint and what is a shite repaint, then you're not going to know the difference, are you?
I feel a bit strange. We've essentially covered... Well, we reviewed a car, and then we've covered some car news, which is a bit...
This is far too sensible for Smith & Stiff.
I was just looking at my notes for things I wanted to talk to you about, and the next one on my list is lemon curd. Isn't it underrated?
Lemon curd is underrated. There was a woman around the corner from my mum and dad who I used to mow her lawn, and she used to make lemon curd from scratch, and we used to buy it.
Really?
Lemon lovely. Yeah. She had a whole string of Renault 5s. Was it Le Car? She just used to drive Le Cars around. It's something about a 3-bolt alloy wheel, which is slightly disconcerting, but very stylish at the same time.
It feels perilous. Citroen AXs, I think, used to.
They were.
I just go, ooh, perilous that.
Don't you just think? Hang on,
hard cornering.
If I was going to scrimp on the production of a vehicle, would I scrimp on one wheel bolt, or would I just go just make the parcel shelf a little bit thinner? Because you know, if the parcel shelf falls off, no one's going to die.
I mean, I suppose conversely, you know, there's that old thing about. Anyone could design a bridge that stays up, but a good engineer would design a bridge that only just stays up, or something like that, is it? And it's like about, you know, essentially that good engineering is not using an excess of materials and overdoing it,
because
it's pointless.
Yeah.
So maybe the Citroën AX only needed three...
Well, it was a light car.
Yeah. Well, that's it, yeah.
So, I mean, go with it. And maybe they were a bigger diameter bolt. I don't know offhand. Someone can tell me. In fact, Chris Harris could probably tell me, because he's got a couple of AX GTs, hasn't he? So he'd know all about the three-wheel bolt scenario.
And he's got a 2CV. They've got three.
Oh, yeah. Of course, they were the originator of the three, I think, weren't they?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I suppose if anyone's listening who has had a 2CV or a Citroën AX or certain types of Renault 5 and has had a wheel come off under hard cornering because of inadequate number of bolts, then do get in touch to help us with this crucial scientific research.
Do you know what? Talking about that, of course, hard cornering in those sorts of cars is usually you're more fixated with the body roll and the tyre trying to come off the bead of the tyre coming off the wheel. And it reminds me of the fact that the world lost Remy Julien last week. Legendary, and I don't say that often enough. The legendary stunt driver of French origin, who did some of the most risky, ballsy car driving that I've ever seen, and maybe didn't get quite as much credit as he might have been due, but I mean, some very cool, even some very sort of old school B-side films that weren't actually very popular films but had some amazing stunts in them that I've seen before.
Yeah, he gets the Italian job is always sort of mentioned, isn't it? But he did loads of, he was the sort of go-to stunt driver guy, wasn't he, in the Bond. There's a great picture in that Bond Cars book by Jason Barlow that we've talked about on the show before, and there's a picture of Remy Julien practicing some of the stunt work for View to a Kill with the Renault 11.
And oh, the just, half Renault.
Brilliant picture of at this point, it's a full Renault 11, but it's also about 30 feet off the ground on some old airfield, about to land on a crash mat, like one of those massive inflatable ones, because they're just practicing, you know, what they can do with the car.
Wow.
And that was him and his team. There's a story I heard about the Italian job. You know that jump where they go up onto the roof of the Fiat factory at Lingotto.
Yes.
And go around the test track. And then to get off the roof, keep looking for that exit, and then they jump between two buildings.
Yes.
And that was, you know, it sort of looks casually simple because it's three cars in formation jumping as well. And it obviously it's mind-bogglingly dangerous because there are lots of variables and it could all go wrong. And I'm sure I read this story where it's like Remy Julien and his team, just before they shot it, they were all just, they were out of the cars and up against a wall having a piss in sync. And someone was like, what what's going on here? What, you all need a piss now? And they're like, no, it's just, you know, if we're going to smash horribly into a ball of tangled metal, it's just better to have an empty bladder. It's one less complication if all your organs are getting punctured and shit.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, that's pretty.
Is that a stuntman thing or formation pissing?
Maybe, yeah.
Or a stunt woman.
It sort of makes sense, doesn't it? You just go, oh, well, I'm afraid, yeah, your spleen's burst. Oh, and also your bladder has burst and released urine into your body where it shouldn't be.
No, you don't want that. You don't want that.
It's like a stunt tank in a car, isn't it? You know, those little stunt tanks. You've only got enough fuel to do the stunt, because why would you carry excess fuel? Why would you carry excess urine?
That's brilliant.
Stunt situation.
Do you think stunt actors have a very small bladder for that reason? It's just a fuel cell, isn't it? It's just a very small. And they have to go for a waz every kind of 10 minutes. Or isn't maybe it? They just don't drink water. They just.
Oh. Is that why Tiff doesn't drink water?
Yeah, because he's very stunty. He's got a stunt bladder.
Of course.
That's totally what
there
it
is such a thing as a bladder tank, isn't there?
There is a bladder tank.
Something different.
Yeah. It could be.
Anyway, no, may he rest in peace, Remy Julien.
Well, he's left a hell of a legacy. I think that's the main thing. And actually, the day before yesterday, in fact, the day of Bloodhound SSC project, the Land Speed Car, saying that it's in financial dire straits once again. Was the day that a chap called John Aykroyd died, who was one of the main engineers on Thrust 2 with Richard Noble, and the head engineer of the Enfield 8000 electric city car, of which I have quite a big fascination with, as you'll know. But yeah, he passed away. I think he was about 90. And I never got to meet him. I chatted to him on the phone several times, and he wrote me a lovely letter, and he's got a book, which I bought because I was really into it. What a cool guy. Again, just one of these people that. He just looked like an old person walking by on the street, and he was, but yet was involved in one of the world's first electric city car, Thrust 2, Richard Branson's round the world balloon conquest.
Really?
Yeah. He designed the capsule, the sort of survival pod, whatever you want to call it, out of Kevlar.
A varied career.
Oh, that's not even the start of it. He did some seriously strange stuff. All over the place. There was a guy who, Sammy Miller, who had a jet-powered dragster car, and he was bored of driving it on drag strips, so he decided to turn the wheels into skis and try and drive it across a frozen lake instead. And he helped to kind of work out how lethal that was.
Well, I've done all the calculations, and the answer is very,
very lethal. Yeah, he did some remarkable stuff, and all started as a bloke on the Isle of Wight hiring out deck chairs. So there you go. Just goes to prove that you can kind of do anything. If you put your mind to it, so I tipped my hat in his honour, and I'm glad I've got his little signed book. But that's cool. Do you know what we've been far too mature in this podcast. I'm almost just slightly ashamed of myself.
I was going to ask actually. There's another. I don't know if this is a mature question, but I wanted to ask why, just to get an update on how many courses are on your drive at the moment.
Well, following on from the Stellantis chat in the last cast, I have got two electric courses on my drive, and I
still just the two, is it?
There's two on the drive. One's blue, one's orange, and one should be with me for a couple of months. The other one should have never turned up, and I still don't know why it's turned up.
So this is you because you rang me. When was this? I can't remember when you rang me last week.
Yeah, 5 days ago.
And
like
when?
That. Yeah,
Which turned up first? The inexplicable one.
The blue one turned up first, which was inexplicable. So I've got one for the next couple of months as a long term test car, and they said we'll send you one over. Is there a colour you'd prefer? And I said, oh, I quite like the orange because it's quite photographic. And the last car I had was electric blue, the Kia Soul electric. I thought, I don't really want another electric blue car. I'll go for the orange one. So this car turns up and it was electric blue. So I sent a message going, oh, it's not like a big deal, don't worry, but I thought we'd both agreed that an orange one would be best. He went, oh yeah, I don't know what's happened there, and then I'll go and find out. And then the next day an orange one turned up, And I've just like, well, I haven't actually driven it yet. It's been here for 4 days, but we've had snow and I've got another one, so I don't know what to do. But what's quite cool...
But the man who dropped the orange one off didn't at any point go, oh, I need to take that blue one away.
No. But I have to say, did I mention that I was driving an electric van the other week for a Stellantis product?
The e-partner?
Yes, yeah, which I've really enjoyed. It's got the best dash binnacle, gauge binnacle, of any vehicle I've driven in the last at least 5 years. When I say best, what? It's not the most impressive in terms of like wow, it's vivid, simple, real analog needles and gauges, but beautifully really? Lit. Yes, I've took a picture of it. I was so impressed with it. And it's just a van, but it's great. I love the layout. It's really simple and it just works, and I think it's aesthetically pleasing. So and it does also have a head-up display, and it's a van. Oh. So it's like
it's a van. It's not like a you know. That's a van. With seats in the back.
No, van, it's van, a van. It's a van. It's a van. It's a fucking van. Van. You do.
It's a van. Van.
It is a hanging van. Yeah. So and it's a really good van. lovely van. I've written down Kevin MacLeod Granada Designs.
You know when you messaged me, what was this? The other, it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, you messaged me and said that you, I can't remember what else you were doing. You might be doing homework with your kids or something like that. And you said you were listening to the Grand Designs theme really loud.
I hadn't had much sleep and I think I'd drunk something. What did I drink the night before? I think I had 4 beers, which is quite a lot for me. And the next morning I was a bit woolly-headed. I was doing homeschooling with the kids, responsible parenting, and I just thought, I'm going to play the theme tune to Grand Designs. And I really enjoyed it because it's quite short because it's a TV theme tune. So I played it 4 times. To the point, I think, where my wife went, could you just, what are you doing? What's going on?
Stop it.
Is this a ringtone? Like, no.
Because you said that to me, I went and queued it up and listened to it. And it's quite magical, isn't it?
Oh, it's twinkly. I mean, it's quite the... I mean, because it's 90s, isn't it, Grand Designs? I think it came out in the 90s. It's getting on a bit now. It's over 20 years old, I reckon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do enjoy it. But I think Kevin could diversify into a car mark-specific show. And Granada Designs would be it, surely.
Talk me through the format.
Well, it would be... it would be Miguel and Pandora have bought a holiday home in Spain, but we're not going to talk about that. What we're going to talk about is the fact that in the garage they have got a Coke bottle coupe version of the Mark One Granada, and they're deciding whether or not they're going to change it to steam power or whether they're going to cover the whole body in solar panels and just drive around only in broad daylight. Anyway, join us for the show. And that's what it is. It would just be, their budget is, how much is your budget to convert this Mark 1 Granada? Well, we've set aside between £700,000 and £800,000.
We've commissioned Ricardo Engineering to do a full job on it.
So you're spending some serious money on it. Well, yeah, it's something we've thought about doing for a really long time. It's definitely something we've wanted to do forever. I mean, I'm not saying that Granada Designs is going to be a mainstream show, although
it feels a little niche. It feels particularly that you've boxed yourself in a little bit. If I came to you and went, now what I'm proposing is a nuclear powered Rover 800. No,
I'm not interested.
Only Granadas. I'm a bit marginal on Scorpios, to be honest. I mean, you know, I'll be purist about this.
Granada Designs. I don't know. I think it. You know what it's like, though. Wealthy people copy other wealthy people. Richard, I think this mm-hmm. kind of unhappy. You know, if the Joneses have got X, then the other Joneses want Y. Suddenly, you're in the realms of £1.6 million Granadas. Who needs a Pagani Zonda? Who needs a I don't know, Siesto Elemento, whatever it's called, Lamborghini? No. Don't need that at all. I think a Mark II 2.8 Gear X with a completely translucent carbon fiber body, shortened wheelbase. Well, why not? Why not? Four Tesla motors
why
in it.
Why not? As long as during the build, Kevin MacLeod turns up intermittently and is a bit sneering about it, but ultimately then likes it.
Oh, of course. Halfway through the build, it was set, and of course at the end. Look, I'm going to be honest. I didn't think I'd like what you were going to do with this Ford. But as time's gone on, I've looked at it and thought, yeah, actually, I think you've done a reasonable job. Now, tell me, have you overstepped your mark on budget? You were going to spend about $700K on this working class 2-door coupe from England. What have you spent on it? Oh, well, we got a bit carried away with the switch gear. We had an artisan Swiss watch maker. Made it all intricately, and there was a lead time of 9 months on each gauge, so, and we've put 16 gauges in the car, so it's sort of gone over a little bit. We've spent 1.2. that's quite a lot. Okay, obviously you're not going to get a return on your investment of your artisan Granada, however I'm quite impressed with it.
Where does the inevitably pregnant wife fit into this?
Well, because it's a working class Ford, obviously they go out for drives and they might hang around lay-bys at night or a nice vista.
Really was. Okay, I'm going to change the subject now.
Yeah,
because I did say to you when I messaged you earlier in the week that we should do some. Listeners' messages, because they're stacking up and I'm feeling guilty is the honest truth.
Yeah, I agree.
And, so I'm going to start from the top, which means if you emailed us recently, you've got a better chance of being. Well, that seems totally unfair,
terrible,
but I'm not very organised.
I've
had loads of messages with people suggesting family cars that I should get. There's one here from Stefan Davis who says. That I should get an MG ZTT, and he's done a little search for me. No V8s, but the KV6 is a sweet alternative. Probably already has a Michael Bolton CD / cassette preloaded, or he recommends a Legacy. I don't know. I can't.
It's a car I've always quite fancied, but I think if I was going to get one, it would have to be the V8 one, and I think the rare is the V8 Estate MG ZTT, isn't it?
Yeah, only surpassed by the Rover 75 Tourer V8, which is proper.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, like 12 of them or something. I saw one once parked on the street in Crouch End, of all places. Yeah. I'm not ashamed to admit this. Well, I kind of am, but I stopped the car and went back to take a picture of it, because it was like seeing a unicorn on the street. So it was in that gold colour that all the press pictures were in as well.
It wasn't mine, although I did live in Crouch End.
Yeah, no, this was after, I think, after you'd gone.
No, it definitely wasn't there.
Tom Bennett says, there's a lot of people emailing and agreeing with us about short startup and switch off on engines as well, so we feel we've vindicated there. You need a cassette adapter for your Nissan Taxi that can only get Cambridge FM.
Yes, I do need to do that, and I do remember those, the very thin ribbony lead that came out of it.
Why was the cable so thin?
I don't know. If you snag it while you're reaching across to change the volume or the aircon or something, you're in real trouble.
It's like a horsehair of cable, but not even that strong. Just rubbery horsehair diameter cable. Yeah, why? Why
cleated,
so flimsy?
Pleated horsehair. Well, it's gonna come. It's bound to be degradation of quality of audio sound. I don't know, but what I do know is that I'm probably gonna. I've decided I might look out for a very, very JDME head unit, like Nakamichi or something. So high audio. High end EQ. But I might get one of those, because I've found a couple of second-hand ones. Because, of course, again, nobody really wants a high-quality single CD player. So maybe I'm going to quids in from that. I can buy myself a really nice natty Japanese Obsession head unit for sure. I went out in it again, actually. I was going to go out in it in the snow, but I thought otherwise. I thought that was a terrible idea, so I didn't take it out in the snow. I had snow on it for 4 days, so it just thawed out yesterday.
So it's living at your house at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in fact...
Oh, right. I assumed you'd stashed it somewhere.
No, in fact, the latest video, by the time this podcast comes out, my first video on the Tokyo Cedric cab will be out. And I have to say my favourite feature is the one that I said to you before, is where you can open the rear passenger door and close it at any speed. And I love that about it. So I was going along the dual carriageway, just opening and closing it like some sort of chitty chitty bang bang, JDM chitty chitty bang bang. Also, wasn't there a remake of Chitty Bang Bang on early in January with David Walliams? Apparently there was. Yeah, I didn't really. I didn't read about it until a couple of days ago. I think it was on New Year's Day or something. It was called Chitty Returns, or I don't know, Shitty Old Chitty, Shit Face.
Chitty Returns.
Yeah, Chit Faced. I can't remember. But all I know is there was a bit of a backlash with Walliams.
Well, rightly so. I mean, I can't remember anything about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I'm sure it's not as good as it might live on in my brain, but
I can't remember anything
about
it. I can't remember anything about Chitty Chitty. All I can remember is that I think Chris Evans owns the original one, and it's got a Ford Pinto motor in it. That's all I know. It's basically a Cortina with glass fibre wings on it.
it's one of those horrible, like a what are those cars that were?
Oh, like a faux
like American. A vintage car.
It's called a monarchy douchebag or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got, if you look closely, the doors are off a Mini or something.
Oh, they're grim.
The frame's cut off.
They're
horrible, aren't they? They're just like really, really terrible 80s wedding cars.
They're bad. They're bad lookalikes. That's what they're, the equivalent of someone who's earning a living from being a lookalike of someone that's really not all that anymore anyway. It's just there's levels of sad there, I feel.
Yeah. Just to wrap this up, Tom, who I was reading out an email about 10 minutes ago from him, he said, I also had a 1.6-litre TD B3 Passat, bulletproof and ran on chip fat. I was going to recommend the G60 four-wheel drive version for Richard as a practical family car, but I think it's too old to be exempt from the ULEZ. And also, I think, Tom, finding one might be quite challenging as well. there's only one thing I'm going to have as a family car, and it's an old Passat G60 four-wheel drive. And I will not rest until I found one.
Do you know something? Somebody DM'd me on bloody...
What, to offer you a Passat G64?
No, I was talking about my brother's Passat that had done over 300,000 that was called Over.
Yeah.
Because of the OVA number plate. Somebody DM'd me, who listens to this podcast, who bought it off my brother.
Oh,
and they sent me some pictures, going, "Oh yeah, I'm sure I bought that car. Is it this?" And he sent me some pictures, and I went, "Yeah, that's it." And he owned it for about 5 years, I think, after selling it to my brother. And he said it worked really well. I drove it to Germany and all sorts of places. But then I lent it to a mate who isn't very sympathetic, and who changed the boost on it or something and blew it up instantly. Yeah, I said your friend's a bell. I said your friend's an absolute bell, and he agreed. He said my friend is a bell. I didn't forgive him for that.
Just a quick one here, an email from Ken Long, who sent us a picture of the infotainment screen and his wife's Ford Ranger as he was playing Smith and Sniff through it. And you know how some of those car infotainment systems, they insist on sort of classifying the music or whatever you're listening to. So, you know, you'd put on, like, Girls Aloud, and it would go, oh, pop, it's pop, and it puts it on the screen. Like, aren't I clever? I know what this is.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, if you play Smith & Sniff, or certainly the last episode, through the system in a Ford Ranger, it identifies us as jazz.
Does it?
Yeah. So thank you, Ken. It's good to know.
We're talking all that jazz.
Yeah. He wants to know if we're smooth or avant-garde. I would have said freestyle, but who knows?
I do quite like a bit of hectic jazz because it really brightens up the day because you just don't know where it's going to go. It's like it's like firing a gun in a really kind of ricochet-y room.
Just, or throwing a bouncy ball in a confined space.
Oh, that's exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is. Yeah, I do love a mad bouncy ball session. Frightens our cats to hell.
I've got an email here from Andrew Frankel. I presume that's not Andrew Frankel, the car journalist. It's another one. But he's trying to suggest a Range Rover P38 for me to buy.
Really?
With the added rider that it could be converted to EV when the emission zone kicks in. The emission zone kicks in September. That's not a lot of time to do that, nor indeed do I want a P38. So, but it's a nice thought. As the P38s go, it's a nice looking one that he sent through.
Someone sent me a DM about a P38 the other week, and they said one of the most reliable cars I've ever bought was a P38. And I found it, and he's even sent me pictures. I found it parked outside, their words, not mine, a massive council block of flats. And he said, I cleaned it up, drove it around for a while, and then I advertised it to someone, and then realised in the service history that I think it was owned by somebody famous, sold it to someone who did a shoot, some sort of, don't know, grouse shoot, whatever these shoots are, some members of the royal family turn up, and there's a photo of the P38 parked next to like some royal cars, having been living outside a council block of flats 6 months previous. So it just goes to show, you see, you know, you can...
There you go, you never know.
Boy, yeah. It's boy done sort of good, like, P38, kind of that is, isn't it?
Pygmalion story, yeah. I'm going to jump straight to this email from Jamie Webb because we're sort of running out of time, but this is a good story. Particularly because it involves schoolyard gossip, which is always fertile ground. Jamie sent a message, first of all, trying to persuade me to buy a BMW X5 4.8 IS, which... probably won't do that. But he says, this used to be gossip that filled the corridors of my secondary school, which would spread like wildfire when every so often his mum, it's a mate of his at school, his mum would come to pick him up in a G55 AMG.
Hey?
But it was always the same G55. The claim was that this mate's dad had over 20 G-Wagens, but his mum always turned up in the same one, and so this was regarded as a chink in the armour of the gossip that surely if he had over 20 G-Wagens it would be a different one each time, so no one really believed him. And then Jamie goes on to say, jump ahead a few years and I hadn't seen Turkish John, which apparently is the mate's name, since we were at school. Ended up running into him in teen as I got off the coach on a university ski trip. Since then, we've met up for a few beers in town. And a couple of Christmases ago, I thought I'd call him out on this bullshit gossip from school.
Oh, no.
I thought, I've got him here. There's no way after 6 years and 8 hours of day drinking, he's going to be able to come up with a story or any photos. He came back with, well, we can just grab a cab back to mine and I'll show you. 15 minutes later, I'm standing outside what looks like Fort Knox in the middle of St. John's Wood. And the 8-inch door opens to reveal the back of a Maybach-converted convertible short-wheelbase G.
What?
In front of that, towering over everything, was a 6x6. And seemingly tucked away at the back was the G55 he used to get picked up from in school, which it now transpires is their city runabout. Since this night of gobsmacking enlightenment, Turkish John regularly sends me teasing pictures of the rest of the fleet, with all of them sat there in an aircraft hangar on trickle charges, looking like Terminators.
Oh my gosh, Turkish John, he wasn't bullshitting.
So Turkish John, if you're at school with Turkish John and you haven't caught up with him in many years, Jamie from school has found out that he's not a bullshitter. So that, I mean, that's pretty remarkable, really, because usually it's the other way around, isn't it? You find out that... the kid who you thought was talking shit in school was actually talking shit in school. So that's amazing. There's a story of a sort of like an inverse J from the in-betweeners. That's pretty amazing. Hats off to Turkish John. Jamie's added a PS as well, which just sort of makes it equally remarkable. He says, PS, Turkish John's dad is also a big Rolls-Royce fan / collector. So God knows what he's got.
Bloody hell, Turkish
there,
John's old man is...
I know.
He's got some serious cash cars, hasn't he? He's bloody hell. I tell you what, this is what I love about the podcast, it brings out so many interesting stories which sound unrealistic, but they're always backed up.
Yeah.
There's always backup there, which I'm really pleased about. I love that. I'd like to meet Turkish John's dad now.
I know. Well, he's only down the road from me, St John's Wood. I keep my eyes peeled for 20, you, I know. And the 6x6.
Even if I like G-Wagons, why would I want that many of them?
Well, it sort of goes to that thing I was saying about the other week. You know, not, I don't think I've ever owned the same type of car, model, make a model of car twice, because it sort of feels like you've got to keep moving on. And,
yeah.
And I sort of like, all that money in G-Wagons, you could have sort of tried something else. I don't know. Anyway, one final thing, since we were just talking about P38s, just to prove my point, that from the Andrew Frankel brackets, probably not that one, who sent me a thing saying, why don't you get a P38? A guy called Tom Hollick just sent us a picture of a P38 Range Rover in St Albans, which has got its arse on the ground and its nose in the air due to what I can only presume is some kind of horrible air suspension problem. And that is exactly why I don't really ever.
It's the Range Rover hydrofoiling effect that I do particularly like. I do like a good hydrofoil stance.
I've just got to read the rest of Tom's email, actually, because it says his other point was about cassettes, one cassette in a car, like your Roxy Music in the taxi.
Oh.
He says, I have one in my old M3, which is, alas, Hello, I Must Be Going by Phil Collins, and it's sadly stuck, meaning it comes on regularly while flicking through modes on the stereo.
I told you, when I had a tape deck in my old Jag XJ40 years ago, before I changed all the audio, and the only tape I had at the time was I got from a local charity shop for a laugh, and it was the movie soundtrack to Fletch Lives. So I used to regularly just listen to all of Fletch, a Chevy Chase movie. God. That's not his best film, and none of the songs in it are particularly memorable, but I've heard them all a lot, like too much.
Tom finishes his email by saying, then again, who doesn't love Phil's turgid version of You Can't Hurry Love? Turgid. Right, that's quite enough of this.
If you would
like to drop us an email, then it's smithandsniff@gmail.com. Or if you are one of our lovely Patreons who generously chucks us a few quid to keep doing this nonsense, then you could send us a message through there, and there's a sort of marginally better chance that it might get read out. That is, in fact, Jamie, who told us about his mate Turkish John and the G-Wagons, he emailed, and then I think in despair at going, oh, they've ignored my email, the useless twat, he became a Patreon and sent us a message through there, and look, he's had his thing read out.
Oh, Jamie, thank you so much.
System works.
And thank you to everybody who is a Patreon of this podcast. It's really, really kind of you, and it's hugely appreciated.
Indeed.
We're going to hopefully do a bit more on Patreon. We're just trying to work out what you might want. So we'll leave it there.
Because we sort of feel like the answer might be nothing. Like, just keep doing this and please don't overreach yourselves. Anyway, I have three things to tell you before we end. One, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Late Brake Show. It has lots of fabulous things on it, including a new and exclusive look at Johnny's imported Japanese taxi and a review of the Mustang Mach-E. Two, I have several books out. One of them is called Boring Car Trivia Volume 2, available exclusively on Amazon as a ebook or a paperback. And three, Peter Hook, the bass player from Joy Division, and Stephen Morris, the drummer, were once questioned by the police under the suspicion that they might have been the Yorkshire Ripper. Turned out the confusion came because Joy Division's tour schedule around Britain at the time matched the movements of the killer.
Oh my gosh. How joyful.
It's a bit mad, that, isn't it?
Yeah. I can't match that kind of trivia.
I'm not sure that I don't even know where that came from.
But
it is true.
I've got a cactus right in front of my laptop here, and in the pot next to the cactus is a very small Fisher-Price figurine from one of my kids' toys from when they were very young, and I kept it because I feel like it looks like Yaphet Kotto from Live and Let Die. And I'm gonna send you a picture of that.
You must.
Yes.
Sorry to bang on about the Patreon, but that's something else. Every week I put up a page of pictures and links that are relevant to the show, so if there's certain things you want to see that we're talking about, there's a chance they'll be up on there. That's it. We'll do this all again next week, I suppose. Until then, thank you ever so much for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Lovely.
Lovely. Sweet, amazing. Stopping recording.